You're listening to Your Rivers Are Wrong, the podcast. My name is Merle. I'm here with my good friend Dante, and we're here to build worlds and tell their stories. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whenever you may be. Welcome back to the Your Rivers Are Wrong podcast. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Dante.
And I'm the other host, and my name is Merle.
And we're here, as we are every week, to talk about the wonderful whimsies of world building, the arts and aesthetics of setting up a setting, and telling stories born from it. Today is episode 20. We're finally out of our teens.
Hello.
Very, very exciting.
We're coming of age. How beautiful.
Almost there. Almost there. One more year. One more week, I suppose, right? Well, by the end of this season, we'll probably be at like, what, 27, 28?
Yeah, I think so. Where did we start? 15 or so? Yeah.
Yeah, 15. It'll be a point where we stop caring about the numbers. But for right now,
not
boy,
today.
20s are always so exciting.
Yep. We can drive.
Wait, like we can. Yeah, we can drive.
Right? In America? Yeah. Or, well, actually also here. So.
Yeah, I don't know if it, I'm pretty sure every country, at least 18, everyone can drive, right? There's no like 21.
I don't know. Isn't there? Maybe. Country? It feels not too much of a leap if country.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah.
Good start.
good start. So, speaking of driver's licenses, this week has not been the best start for me.
Oh.
Because last night I forgot my wallet on the bus and it drove off into the distance.
Oh, God.
Which is still very silly because I was the last stop and the last person on the bus. So like in theory, right? It shouldn't be too hard to find my wallet because I'm truly the last one there on the last stop of the last run of the bus.
Makes sense.
But, you know, the bus depot's like, well, if it shows up, it shows up. I'm like, don't you know what bus it's on? Wouldn't it be easy? But it's fine. It's
please
fine.
Please help
I'm
me.
I'm not stressed. Hello, please.
But you didn't find it then in the end? Like, when did you figure out you didn't have a wallet?
Literally 5 minutes after getting off the bus. Oh, I check my pocket. And I'm like, oh, one pocket is lighter. My friend taught me like the two pocket check. I guess girls have it harder than guys, but this is a trick that basically saved me for years and years. The two pocket check is you put your phone in your left pocket and your wallet in the right. And after you leave any place or before you go any place, you just pat both pockets, just pop up. And if you feel both of them in there, you're good to go. Mm. If you don't, then you get to start to panic. But it works anywhere. Takes a split second. Truly just saved my life because I used to in high school. This is a weird tangent to start the podcast
on. I don't mind.
In high school, I was notorious for losing my wallet. Hmm. It was like every few months, my wallet would disappear, quote unquote disappear. When I was just kind of, you know, just absent-minded.
Sure.
So that lasted until like the first couple years of college sometime in high school, my friend taught me the two pocket check, but you know. When my life changed.
I was going to say, I love how you like were, how do you say that, enlightened after this masterful cheat of life,
it was life changing. Because I had lost like 3 or 4 wallets over the course of like 2 years. I was just that.
Okay.
I just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
But in college, someone gave me like a really nice wallet for Christmas. It had like my initials printed into the leather.
Yeah,
I never lost it.
Oh, yeah. You didn't? Okay. Because I would have like fancy wallets, I would be either terrified of losing it and not have fun literally every day because I'm terrified of losing my wallet, or I would lose it and feel absolutely awful because it's a beautiful wallet. So like either of those options suck for me. So I prefer just like the shittiest wallet for your wallet, it's also, I guess, the things that are in it. So it might matter how beautiful your wallet is. But, you know, if you have like a beautiful bag or something,
Give me a second.
Okay.
I'm pausing because I just got a notification that the tracker in my wallet has been noticed. Give me a second.
Okay.
I don't know if this is making this podcast. Where is it? Where are you? Oh, you're in the depot. You're in the bus depot. If they don't find my wallet.
Your wallet?
Let's talk about this. You know what? This might actually make it into the podcast because I just got a notification for it.
Keep going.
I have trackers in my wallet and usually they don't pop unless it's a Bluetooth tracker. So you, like a phone has to be close to it that has the tracker app to notice it. So apparently it was just a little, as I'm talking about this, it just pinged in the bus depot. So if somehow, some way they don't find this wallet.
You're like, I have proof. Don't you dare. Send me away.
It's right there. I'm so mad.
Wait, okay, so you went to the bus depot and then you didn't get a ping and now you get a ping?
You're not allowed to go to the bus depot. It's like sealed off from everybody.
Had to ask, like, can you please go find it?
Yeah, I've been calling. I've been calling the bus depot and they're like, just call in later, call in after rush hour, see if it shows up.
Right.
And for me, because with the Tile tracker, I can check on my, this is not sponsored by Tile, by the way. Maybe it should be. I have an app on my phone that tells me when it gets picked up.
Right.
Like notify when found and it sends me an email. So I just got an email just now in the bus depot. If it moves, okay. I'll know. That's not important. That's not important.
I love how you're like,
you know what's more important? This podcast. Because boy, did I just spend 2 or 3 hours replacing all of my cards.
Oh, dude. No. No,
it's fine. All right. I don't know how much sound did you hear the notification from my phone?
I don't think I did, but computer? I feel like we should edit it in just for the sake of excitement.
It's very loud.
I want my this to be like a dramatic play now. Yeah.
Unreal. Okay. viewers at home, you will be updated on this.
I love how this is like a live.
This is so frustrating.
Live moment, like captured in real time.
Literally it's seen. Oh boy, literally seen 4 minutes ago. At the bus depot. I'm tilted, but I guess relieved. Anyway, the story. This was the point. Basically. I got this really nice wallet. It had my initials engraved into it. And I'm like, well, this is really great. Mm-hmm. So since then, which was like 5-6 years ago, I had never lost my wallet again. I just kind of kept it.
Okay.
My tracking app and everything else, I've invested into not losing things as I grew older. I've managed to hold on to it. The problem is that over the course of those years, I became so notorious for losing my wallet that people kept gifting me more wallets. So in my room, I have
this is beautiful.
Seven or eight wallets that have never been used because I magically stopped losing it.
Right. Yeah.
Once I got a wallet that was like really important. So maybe they'll get some sunlight today. Maybe not. If my wallet shows up as I see in this app, I'll call later. But anyway, that I don't know if that was the tangent we were supposed to go on, but
well, we did it.
Wonderful. Before we jump in, anything with you? Any updates in your life?
Oh, I have a good update that I literally like 10 seconds ago in the mail and that I'm opening up trying to not make noise because I'm too excited. But I ordered 2 plants online, or like 2 cuttings, I think is the word.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So someone rooted these cuttings. When you make a cutting, you basically literally cut off a leaf or 2 of a plant and then put it in water and then it grows roots, right? So you have a new plant and it's very cool and free. And these ones are from like the most TikTok famous hipster plant that you can possibly imagine. It's like a philodendron, which has a fancy pink colored leaf if you're lucky. Like it's called variegated. So if you're lucky, it grows like leaves that are partially or completely pink. And it's like
nice.
Overrated and so annoying because everybody wants this one. And I was so long on the fence of like, I don't need this. You know, these people are spending so much money on plants. It's just because they're pink. You know, why? I understand the hype, but I'm not buying into it. And, you know, I guess I did. So now I have a pink plant. And it's very fancy. And it looks super good.
Sometimes you got to treat yourself, you know?
I think so. And this wasn't like super expensive. Like there are like so many so-called rare or fancy overpriced plants out there that's absolutely stupid. Like since I'm more looking into plants, I realize how much of a community and like how expensive you can make this hobby if you want to. Yeah.
I have a coworker who gardens as a hobby.
Ah, okay.
And they said they recently went to a place, I don't know where they traveled to, but it was like, this plant, this orchid has, I believe it's yellow tips on their leaves, which is unique. And they're like, oh, how much is this plant? And the cashier was like, $100.
Yeah.
I was like, $100. What about this one? Which is the same plant well, without the yellow tips, $16. Yeah. Oh, okay. So
it's
this
ridiculous. Yeah. And some are like, I mean, of course, some are super cool, but then still, are you going to like buy a plant for 100 euros or 200 euros? This is like crazy prices. I think for this cutting, which has quite a few leaves, so that's good. And it has already roots, which is also good because sometimes if you make a cutting, it doesn't grow roots for some reason. And then you, you know, it's useless. So that's pretty good. And it has quite a lot of pink, which is also good.
Nice.
And I paid, I think, in total, like 15 euros for it, which is, it's still a cutting, right? So I don't have a plant. You know, it's literally a few leaves on a stick, but it's not like 100 euros. So that's good.
Yeah.
But it feels like I feel partially guilty about this, but I still have this plant now and I'm quite happy about it.
You know, you doomed yourself to constant updates about this plant.
Oh, God. No. What if it dies? I don't know the guilty like on the internet. No,
no, we have to know. We have to know. The people need to know. The people need to know.
I brought this on.
This is our content now.
Oh
this
no!
Is, welcome to the
wallet finding and like not letting
pink tip plants.
Is our podcast now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Where we talk about gardening and the arts and aesthetics of setting up your hydrangeas and petunias.
I mean,
it's just going to be a great time.
Be careful what you wish for, because like I'm so into this plant shit now, I could literally talk for hours about this. So please don't make me do this, because it's kind of
okay. No,
no.
Yeah, we got to stick to
But I will update you next week if it's still alive, and if it's not alive, I will not talk about it unless you bring it up.
Wait, no, because if we forget to talk about it and it's perfectly fine, people will be like, oh, what happened to the plant?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, we have to remember. We'll put it in our notes. We have to, first thing next week, question is, what about the plant?
Is the plant still good? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Cool.
Wrote that down. Great.
We're all set.
Anyway, yeah. So to start the podcast, welcome. Welcome back. We talk about world building here. Both of us have a topic. famously. Both of us have a topic we bring to the table. We don't know each other's topics, but that's kind of the fun in it.
Nope.
So I believe you're starting us off today. Is that correct?
Is that correct? Yes, that is correct.
Right.
I was looking at my notes from like last week, because last week we also had like confusing rambling halfway through the podcast. And then it said, oh, yeah, I'm not starting. But now that I realize it's the next week, I am starting. Okay.
Great, great, great.
Yes. Cool. Let's talk about like actual world building and stuff. For this week, I have a topic that I'm sort of both not interested in and interested in. This is why.
Good start.
The topic is religion.
Okay.
Because I think in fantasy and science fiction and, you know, world building related genres, religion is quite a big thing. Like when I first got into D&D, there's this whole pantheon of gods and there's like history, hours and hours, texts upon text of history about how the world was created and all these different planes that the gods reside on. This feels like Greek mythology to me in high school. And it's super intimidating. Like,
of course,
literally every time we have a session with another D&D group that we're both playing in, every time a god is mentioned, I'm like, my character doesn't know anything about religion, so I don't know about this, because I don't know about this. And I have no, there's too much to like start knowing about it, so I don't bother.
But oh, yeah, religion it's definitely is, like, a rabbit hole.
It's such a rabbit hole. I like peeked into the rabbit hole and I was like, nope, nope, I'm out of here. Yeah, people are super into it. And it's very much part of the lore, I guess, and the also the daily life, I guess, of characters and of D&D as a system. And I think that's quite interesting, because personally, this is why I'm not interested in it. I'm always very confused when there's lots of lore involved. Like, I'm not the best at keeping up with lore. So, like, big pantheons and multiple planes of existence, you know, they need a bit of brain power from me.
Right, right.
But on the other hand, it is very cool and a very unique kind of world building, I feel, because it's partly about belief. Like, is this a real thing in your world, or is this the belief system in your world that might not even be true, but, you know, the people believe in it? That's already a distinction. Then you're like, how much influence does this quote unquote real god, or, you know, ghost or whatever you want to call it, has on your actual world? And how do they relate to each other? Like in D&D, you can actually go to another plane of existence, which I guess makes it real. You know, like there's all kinds of interesting world building specific questions that come up if you start a pantheon or if you start thinking about religion. And that's what I do find very interesting about it. So I just want to hear from you if you prefer world building pantheons, or if you do it yourself, or yeah, what's your, where are you at?
So Where to start? So I guess in the context of the campaigns we've been in, we always play in the Forgotten Realms or Faerun. And that has like a 30 to 50 plus deity pantheon, right? And the people we play with, our DM and others, have a pretty good understanding of the pantheon of the Forgotten Realms. And sometimes you could mention to something offhandedly and I'll be like, okay, which god is that? Which one is that? And they like know it right off the bat, oh, right? Yeah. I'm not at that page yet. I think there's something really interesting about the Forgotten Realms. I think we'll start with this because this a good fantasy start. Mm-hmm. In a world with magic, right? And clerics and paladins, where their magic is divined by the gods and very overt and visible, right? Yeah. In a setting like that, gods are basically undeniable. Like, you see their magic there. You see their influence being called down.
Yeah.
And you can't really pretend like they don't exist, right? So in the on the topic of the Forgotten Realms, it's not really about whether do the gods exist or not. It's do I choose to follow this god? And what will I get out of it? Or how will this change my life?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's an important contrast to make when comparing it to like real life, where there are many religions, but the manifestations are not as overt. You know, I consider myself a religious person. And a lot of the questioning is their presence known? You know, is their influence so present in either these people's lives or in physical, visual manifestations that I can truly believe in this god, right? That's the big question that's persisted over history.
Yeah.
So if you talk about a fantasy world, you're world building one of the biggest questions is how present is the god? How involved are the deities, right? Mm-hmm. If their presence or their influence or their power is undeniable and it's seen everywhere and landscapes change when they want in present time, like in real time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Then it's not really a question of believing them because you know they're there, right? It's obvious. Yeah. But it's a question of do your beliefs align with theirs? One of the big things for paladins in D&D is their oath, right? They have to align or agree to or sign up to the tenets of a god and thus are blessed with their power.
Yeah.
You know? So in my experience, I usually run homebrew settings. I don't run Forgotten Realms too much. Mm-hmm. So yeah, one of the most prominent building blocks, especially in my games, are the presence of gods. Like, why is the world as it is? What did the gods do to shape it that way? And why do they or do they not continue shaping it? What is the world kind of, where does the world kind of situate them? And one of the biggest things to solve right at the jump is why aren't the gods solving everything?
Yeah.
Like, if you choose to put a god in your setting, you have to explain why they're not fixing all the problems, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's a choice by the god that, you know, people should have the ability to influence their world without me, the god, dictating what they should do, you know, free will and all that. Mm-hmm. And another one is that either the god was defeated or the god has chosen to leave, or it was an agreement or a pact that was made that they no longer influence the present setting, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, I think so too. I also like the way that you talked about the pantheon very much in the beginning, that it's just the question of choosing or, you know, preferring a god or a religious system or, you know, belief instead of like the question, does it actually exist or not? I mean, in real life, I have a different opinion, but in the pantheon style of, I guess, god making, like world building, call this, right? I like that it's a sort of, it feels like, what do you want to have as a job later, right? Like, which god do you follow? It's a sort of open, okay to ask question because you can just say, well, I believe in this, or I find friendship very important, or I find light very important, or I find honesty very important. And then there will be someone that sort of fits your needs, I guess, for a belief system because there are so many out there. And because the question of, like, does it exist or not is kind of irrelevant, I guess.
Right.
It's just to sort of pick and choose. Yeah, that sounds a bit, you know, disdaining, but it's okay to sort of line up with the one that you prefer. And that's kind of nice. I think that's quite fun or something. It's part of a sort of casual conversation, right? Like, oh, what god are you following or are you following?
Well, I'm sure the gods don't see it as so casual, you know?
I mean, that's true, but it feels like an okay question to ask in sort of an introduction. Yeah, and that feels different from how we in the real world are sort of looking at religion or having religion part of the society, I guess. So that's quite nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Forgotten Realms functions on a Great Wheel cosmology, which basically means that there are multiple planes outside of them, our plane, which is the material. And depending on what you ascribe to, what your alignment, which gods you follow, you end up in one of these planes in the afterlife. So you have pretty much that much hold on where you want to go after you die. Hmm. So like you look at like mechanically, if you look at all of the cleric subclasses or all the domains you can take, like life or light or trickery, things like that. Mm-hmm. Your gifted magical abilities, you're gifted a list of spells to choose from. But with it, when you make this pact or agreement, you also agree not to follow any other gods, you know, because your new tenets change. Like you have these new guidelines to follow in your life. And should you break from them, then you lose out on the power gifted to you by those gods.
Yeah, right. Hmm.
I remember there was a skit online where like a pretend D&D session where one of the players tried to cheat the system and pledged an oath to multiple gods. So he's like, because of this oath to this god, I get this power. And because of the oath to this god, I get this power and this to this and this to this. Mm-hmm. The DM saw that and basically said, well, you could do this, but you're going to offend this god that you followed,
gods,
I believe, five days ago. And then by betraying that, you've also betrayed this god. So you actually lose the ability to speak.
Right.
And you can no longer, your hands are now on fire. And you have been damned to three different planes after your soul passes. And it's like,
oops,
not a game.
Yeah, that's not how it works. Yeah. Yeah. Nice try. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm.
Yeah. Also, I love in literature the way gods in a multi-deitic pantheon interact with each other, right? If there are some like religions are monotheistic and there's a singular god who's created everything. Mm-hmm. In polytheistic settings, you get this kind of dynamic where they're fighting for control or they've made an agreement not to mess with each other. And mm-hmm. you get this part of the world, you get this part of the world. I'm good, you're evil, you know, we'll split it up that way, things like that. And that conflict or that interaction is so like otherworldly that it's very fun to see it play out because, you know, they're omnipotent. They're super strong.
Yeah. It's like a kaiju battle, right? Where you see the giants fighting and you're like in awe and terrified because you're like puny and weak. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that also has a certain appeal. Yeah, we talked about this before, but like the looming over the world quality that some things have, like the weather, but also like giant mountain ranges or, you know, life-changing events, right? God's fighting or like the pantheon lore, I guess, as you describe it, also has this quality. And that's quite nice because it feels like you're part of something bigger. And at the same time, you yourself are still so small. You know, you're such a tiny part of that storyline. And that's quite interesting. And then there, the question of what you already talked about a little bit, how much do the gods, I mean, either can or want to be involved in the world that you create as like the daily, day-by-day world, the daily life, right? For the life of me, I don't know any of the Greek gods anymore, but I remember there's like quite a lot of Greek gods that were like, well, they can just do whatever they want. We're just chilling on this mountain. And then, you know, daily life is, of course, a little bit influenced by, oh, I believe or I follow Zeus or any, you know, that's the only one I know. But it's not like you will literally be punished or tortured or burned alive if you don't do, you know, there's not like that direct, how do I say that? Like, how do you say that? Like cause solution
or
like, yeah, or there's not like the direct link. If I do something, I will literally tomorrow be punished for it by this god in a very like practical way. Like your hands will burn on fire or something. That's not really a thing if the gods are like kind of indifferent about our world.
Right, right.
And that's also a question you might want to ask yourself. Personally, I always find it a bit confusing in the Greek myths that sometimes humans are just randomly punished and sometimes they just don't care about you. Or they're just like, wow, these weird humans, haha, look at them go, and then nothing happens, right? And that's an interesting thing that you might want to make, you know, a conscious decision about. Like, do you want the gods to have direct influence on your world? And how does that change things? There are, I think, in a lot of pantheon-based worlds, I'm also thinking about the Critical Role one, where you have like the calamity thing, which shaped the world in a big way. I think that was kind of an historic event where there was like a big battle of gods or like holy creatures or something.
World-shaping.
World-shaping events. And then it has a lot of influence on your world. But if the gods are just kind of chilling around and be like, oh, yeah, there's also a planet. Oh, yeah, there's also people, I guess. Sure, whatever. They can do whatever they want. that's also fine, but then the relationship is different, and that also means that believing in a god or following a deity like that will have, you know, different repercussions for how your daily life, world building, what that looks like. And that's I think a relevant question.
Yeah, and that's not something that's limited to like a fantasy setting. Like real world religions really factor in how much does your god play into your daily life.
Hmm.
Like some religions deem all facets of life, everything you experience, as either a blessing from the god, something favored to you and the people around you, mm-hmm. or it could be like a curse, a punishment for things that the world has done. You could also like look at it as like deism is the belief that the gods created the world, or the god created the world, and then has a hands-off approach. It's like, I've done everything I'm going to do.
Right, yeah.
Now you guys have free reign. Like, best of luck, you know? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have like a preference in the way that you build pantheons, or is there like a go-to thing that you do, or no?
How I like building pantheons? For me, from a storytelling standpoint, I often do this, and it's much easier for me to kind of tell the story this way.
Mm-hmm.
That the world was created by these many deities, and then due to conflicts with each other or some great change in perspective of the people they've made, they've chosen mm-hmm. not to interfere anymore.
Oh, okay.
And some people still kind of ascribe their power from the gods. The gods still kind of bless them with gifts and all that.
Hmm.
But in terms of like the direction the world is headed, that's left entirely in the hands of the people. I think that's a much easier for me to run, because I don't have to worry about, hey, why doesn't Aquadaqua fix the oceans, you know?
Sure.
Why is it still a dangerous place? Things like that.
Right. Yeah.
Look, one of the best things about storytelling, being able to set these up, these great pantheons on a macro scale, making sure that the world is set and makes sense by the hands of, but in a inherently magical world, is the ability to go micro, to see how the world has changed on a person-to-person level, like the relationships that happen because this religion is this religion exists. How do they view the gods? You know, is it like, thank you for blessing our harvest? Here's
right,
a statue.
Yeah.
Here's a waterfall that you created that we are now using to irrigate our fields. You know, mm-hmm. like blessings from Aquadaqua, making up this god as we go. Clearly, this is the prompt today. Aquadaqua.
Can't escape from it.
And playing like a cleric is, or a paladin in D&D in particular, is a constant struggle between reconciling your own beliefs and values and virtues
mm-hmm.
versus the gods and the oath that you bound yourself to. You know, do they truly align as you continue to adventure? Can you reconcile the differences between them? And is that a conversation that you eventually have to have with the god that you worship, you know?
Right, yeah. We're getting an interesting point here. The thing that I, struggle is maybe a big word, but the thing that I wonder most about in terms of religious world building, I guess, is also the very important aspect of a religion or of like a holy deity or something, right? Someone or some being that stands above all and has major influence if they want to or can on your daily life and on your little life. There's this very big power dynamic going on. You can't deny that religion or following a deity or, you know, as you were saying, like binding yourself to a deity with an oath for life or, you know, for literally getting powers is a massive power dynamic. No matter how nice the god is, you know,
course,
you'll
yeah.
never be on par with them. Yeah. For example, if your paladin starts with an oath of, for the life of me, I don't know how paladins work, but if there's an oath of honesty and then at some point he lies because he wants to protect someone and then the god's like, fuck you, you're not honest. And then I'll take your powers away. Right? Like that can be a situation in this power dynamic
because you sort of
bind yourself to, you know, like how much nuance is there in that? And then I think in a lot of ways, there's like healthy ways of you know, figuring out this relationship.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of gods that have like conversations with the ones they follow or with the ones they grant power, right? Which is nice. Then it becomes more of a friendship, but still that doesn't change the power dynamic. And this is the thing that bothers me a little bit about it. Like, if there's such a creation process involved, right? They literally made this world. And then one, I'm like, shouldn't they be responsible for that world they're creating? Like, how can they just sort of take their hands off and be like, cool, you're on your own now. I'm bored. I'm going to do something else. Or, oh shit, we fucked it up. Well, I don't know. Okay, I'll just go here and you'll figure it out. Okay, bye. Right? I would be like kind of angry about that if I knew that was actually how it worked. Like, how can you sort of abandon me after literally creating me? That's kind of rude. So that's a thing. And if you're not abandoning it, like you still have influence over me. I don't know. There's a weird thing going on that I'm not sure how to figure out.
Yeah.
In terms of storytelling, of course, a power dynamic is an interesting device. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm pretty much for it because I like tortured people. As we've established in the last crazy Azula rambling episode.
Tune into episode 19 to figure out the context of that line. Yeah, of course.
So, you know, and power dynamics are interesting because of that, partly. Yeah. Like, it's a pretty twisted relationship that you have whenever there's a very big power dynamic involved.
Yeah, that's
we can see it in Jester, right? In Critical Role, like the whole first part of the season is very much a twisted power dynamic and you're not sure if she's okay. Yeah, that's a pretty big question that I feel like is relevant when you're talking about following gods or, you know, deity pantheon-like world building. Mm. And in terms of character development or in terms of, you know, literally just a relationship, like a friendship or like, you know, when you're having conversations with this god, of course, it's a super interesting talk or a super interesting relationship because it is so unusual and kind of weird and maybe twisted or not. And maybe unhealthy or not. Like, unhealthy relationships are always in storytelling because they're kind of interesting to look at in a way. In terms of like literal storytelling, they're a fascinating tool. But then because it's called religion, I find it a tricky thing because religion is not something that doesn't exist in our world. It's like a very much real existing
thing.
There's
layers to it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's a lot of layers to it. I'm not sure if I've figured out all the layers, but yeah, that's also a lot of times pretty much in my head whenever there's like lots of pantheon-like religions or gods or something involved in your story. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a lot to touch on, and I'll try to get through it. I'll try to get through it best I can.
Sure.
Obviously, like, this is a conversation that comes up. If you ascribe to a religion, these are questions that you have to answer, right?
Of course, yeah.
But in storytelling, obviously, not every especially in a multi-deistic pantheon, not every god ascribes to the Spider-Man philosophy, which is with great power comes great responsibility. Some gods will just create things for the fun of it. Not necessarily because they want to tend to it forever. Like, if you, like, say you build a sandcastle, you know, you don't really care what happens to the sandcastle at the end of the day. Some gods have that perspective, which can obviously lead to some ire from the people and the animals who are created by them.
Yeah.
You have to understand that some religions have their gods as faulty. Like, they are not perfect beings, even though they could be omnipotent, but they're not perfect, as in they never make mistakes. So
sure,
you have to understand that there's like a morality that plays into that. Like, even if you have all this power and this will, if we as people were shunted into a position of godhood, would we be able to satisfy everybody that we create? Of course not. That's ridiculous. So gods have to have these tenets that they stand by to make sure that they can say no or yes to things. The people believing in them that they stand by something specifically, and that they won't stray from this philosophy as much as you'd want them to. As a people, we look towards the gods as for guidance, for providence, for protection, things like that, because that's what we want. But there is the movie Bruce Almighty, I believe it was.
Oh yeah,
he answered every prayer sent in, which was millions of prayers he said yes to, and suddenly hundreds of thousands of people won the lottery and there were riots everywhere, you know. So there's a discretion that comes into like how active they can be in the lives of the people they create, which they, you know, limit. So it comes down to kind of understanding the credos or the tenets that your god has established, and then you decide whether you align with it, you know. That you and ironing that out is kind of the struggle of a religious person, to be like, well, I don't perfectly fit into this slot. Can I still like be your follower? Can I still believe in you?
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I like that.
And as a final note, I guess you have to consider, especially in stories and books, the maturity of the god. You know, are they like a truly sagely wise being, or are they petulant and petty? Do they smite things because they want to smite things, like Zeus, you know? A god has to understand, and sagely ones do, that their followers are not perfect people. They will not always follow your tenets. So room for forgiveness is a big thing, you know? You have to understand that, like, there will be times when people fall short, which is what happens in like stories when your cleric has to kill a goblin for the first time. There's a moment of repentance, right?
Sure.
So being able to reconcile mistakes of the past and mistakes of the future with the person that you worship is a big thing, obviously not only in storytelling, but in like the daily life of a religious person. So Mm-hmm. These are conversations that I've had personally hundreds of times. So
I figure.
It's not an unfamiliar topic to me, but it's super, super duper interesting. I love working with pantheons when homebrewing settings. Such a fun take.
I think it's also interesting the thing you mentioned about whether a god is actually like a nice person or like a responsible person. Like, it doesn't have to be necessarily. Of course, the classic idea of a deity or a god is this sort of holy, ageless man, the wise monk, the, you know, all that stuff.
The voice in the sky.
Yeah, the voice in the sky that says, you did good, child. And that always knows what's best and all that stuff. Oh, this reminds me of one episode, by the way, of Kipo and the Age of Wonderbees. I'll come back to that. But I think it might be super fun if if your god is super petty and kind of stupid about things. They have all this power and still they're such an asshole or such an ignorant,
that's what happened in Critical Role,
kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. I mean, kind of. Yeah. Yeah. And I find that also problematic at the same time. But what I was thinking of just now, there's one episode in Kipo and the Age of Wonderbeast, which is a super, super fun animation. I think it's on Netflix. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out. It's super fun and interesting, especially in the world building part, by the way. But there's one episode, I think it's called Fun Guy. So a little bit of spoilers for that. And they are looking for something specific in an abandoned apartment building, basically. The abandoned apartment building is sort of completely overtaken by nature and moss and fungus and stuff like that. And then at some point, they realize that the fungus, which is this specific kind of orange, it's just everywhere in this entire abandoned apartment complex, right?
Mm.
That it has a voice and that it can move and that it speaks and stuff. So it's actually more of a being than just, you know, a lot of moss next to each other. And because they need to go into this specific apartment on like the X-th floor of this complex, and they need to go in a certain cabinet, and, you know, they have things that they want from this building, and the fungus, which is now a sort of being, is in their way, and they need to appease, no, how do you say that? Like,
appeal?
Yeah, appeal to it and like make it at ease. That's where the appease came from. So they need to like be on good terms with them to be able to pass, kind of. Yeah. And this fungus creature is literally voiced by like a 5-year-old or something. And it's super petty. And it's like, but I want to play with you guys. Like, can't you just like wait for it? Why do you have to leave again? And then when it gets angry, it gets like real fucking angry. And then literally the whole building begins to, you know, that's kind of the vibe.
It's super funny.
It's kind of omnipotent in a way of like, it has a lot of power in that situation, right? It's a very impactful being, but it's literally an annoying 5-year-old. And it's the funniest shit to me. And it's so, so fun. So that's really also, you know, you have the same kind of weird dynamic going on, but now it's like you have to literally don't make a child cry and then you can pass. It's the weirdest shit to me.
Gosh.
And it's really cool. So I think there's also a lot of potential for just weird relationships in there. This also reminds me of the Pinterest board that we talked about earlier, the casual ghost friend Pinterest board, where you're like, what if it's just like a fun picnic with my omnipotent being god that I follow? That's fun. That's interesting and weird. I've not seen that a lot. I guess a little bit in Critical Role now, but yeah. I think there's a lot of potential for like other kinds of relationships, but the sort of omnipotent appease me and you shall be granted access to heaven kind of thing.
Right, right. That's such a fun one to play around with. Mm-hmm. There was a campaign I watched. I don't want to, it's pretty deep into the actual campaign, so I don't want to spoil which one
it is. Yeah.
But basically the party, they discover an artifact that turns out to be an artificial being resembling God. Like they have God-like powers, but they have not yet developed a morality. So they don't know what's good, what's bad. So the party has to decide, do we use this God to change the whole world to our benefit? Or do we allow this God to go out into the world, learn about everything, and potentially be influenced by the outside world and turn bad? You know?
Oh, okay. Got it.
So it's like, it's a question of like, is it right to kind of cage them up and indoctrinate the God itself to our own favor? Or should we allow it to grow and learn like a human being would and make those decisions for itself?
Right.
Really interesting question.
That reminds me also of one of my all-time favorite short stories. It's called The Ones Who Walk Away from Amelus. You might have heard about it, maybe not.
I've never heard about that.
I think
cool.
It's from Ursula K. Le Guin, if I remember her name right. It's a short story. I think it's online. You know, you can find it online.
Drop that in the recommended.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We got a channel for that.
It's absolutely beautiful, yeah. Now I kind of don't want to spoil it.
Then don't spoil it. Sure. That's
what... Yeah, but then I can't explain what I'm... Okay. I'll just say, like, please go read this if... Yeah. It's interesting to talk about, like, morality versus, like, a being that can solve everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also an interesting example of this relationship sort of, well, not gone awry, but, like, changed for our benefit suddenly, which is weird because a god is usually kind of the one that you're dependent on the one that solves things or the one that is the solution to your petty, puny human problems. So if you change that up, or if you have, yeah, I love that. If you have a being that is super powerful, but does not yet know what they want or what they stand for, we as sort of the puny humans can have influence on the one that actually will save the world or grant us access to all this riches and power and all that stuff. Yeah, that's very crazy. Yeah.
I love how this conversation like transitioned into like a topic about like godhood and what that kind of entails, you know?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, it's a very relevant thing. I feel like we should have ended up here eventually, because I think that's also why you want or do not want gods in your setting and why how you should fill that relationship in. Like, to me, honestly, it's quite boring if your god is just like how every god ever has been portrayed, which is like the omnipotent, what we talked about earlier, like the wise old man in the sky.
the idea that power doesn't equal wisdom, you know?
Yeah,
you could have
exactly.
all this crazy, you can do a lot, but doing it for the greater good is the question in the air, you know?
Yeah, and honestly, I think that makes it much more interesting to me if it's not maybe at some point even called religion, but just like you're talking about how much power equals how much character and how much sort of goodness that you possess, I guess. And then, you know, the fungus guy the example from Kipo and the Age of Wonder Beasts, it's not a god. It's just super powerful and annoying at the same time. But if it was a god, I don't think I would have liked it as much, because then all of a sudden it has this air of responsibility this. Yeah, I mean, even like without whatever his character is, if he would have a religion, then I'm instantly kind of annoyed by it, because it gets back into this classic thing of like, oh, there's exactly what you're saying, like power equals wisdom, or there's a responsibility that they have or should have. And that's so often not the question.
That's a good word. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's way more interesting if they're not. And then it just becomes a question of like super powerful characters versus not powerful characters, or like averagely powerful characters, and how that relates to each other. And that's basically also what a god is, a super, super powerful character. So, you know, I find that much more interesting than if there's like a whole idea of religion or something involved. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's the Superman problem. Does power equal authority, you know?
I guess
like,
so,
just
yeah.
because you have, you just because you can, should you, you know? Mm-hmm. Big question.
Yeah.
Love that. Wow. This topic is...
Interesting.
This we topic went a ways. Yes, we did. But it's a good topic. Good thing to talk about.
That's okay. That's okay.
I can try to keep my topic short, and we can just revisit it again if we wanted to.
Sure, that's fine.
So my topic, a bit on a lighter note, it's just something that I very much enjoy, is the topic of time skips. It's when a story decides to take a very long break, and when returning, a lot has changed. We see examples in, like, I wrote these down, Dragon Ball to Dragon Ball Z, when Goku goes from a young kid to a kid-minded adult. there's obviously the 70-year gap between Avatar and Legend of Korra.
Right.
There, in anime, of course, there's a 2-year gap of One Piece. There's a 3-year gap of Naruto to Shippuden. And then the 10-year gap to Boruto, where they talk about his kids. In American animation, there's Rugrats, famously baby show, had a spinoff called All Grown Up, which is them in their teenage years in high school, I think.
It's literally the point, yeah.
So I kind of wanted to talk about the merits, the risks and rewards of including a time skip in your story. Like, what do you have to gain from it, and what do you have to lose? Things like that.
That's a fascinating tool, isn't it? I'm an avid theater nerd. So very often in theater or in, you know, shows that use a kind of standard format of storytelling, right? And also in movies, I think, now that I think about it, they have a period of a story where the main character is a child, maybe like 1/3 of it, or just 3 scenes in the beginning. And then, you know, they switch to the adult character and then the actor changes.
Right.
It's like you can't really have all of the in-betweens, because then you have like 6 actors that need to look alike and stuff, and it becomes very confusing and annoying. So very often, whenever there's a child involved, I feel like it's sort of a prologue, or, you know, just a sort of, this is how they started. And then the actual story begins, or you can sort of see right. what it was before, right? So that's what I instantly think about. Same with like the Harry Potter epilogue that we talked about earlier. Like, it's just a sort of
yes.
where are they now kind of dynamic. And that's fun, but also very much, yeah, meh. I don't know. Very often, I feel like right. it doesn't add a lot to it. So it needs to be like very well put if it works for me.
Yeah. There's a difference between an epilogue time skip and a mid-story time skip, you know? Mm-hmm. They serve yeah. like entirely different purposes. Like, basically, what I love about a time skip is that, like, two major things change. The people and the setting, right?
Mm-hmm.
After a time skip, you get to see, like, the actual characters that you've come to appreciate, like, grow up. Maybe a cool new look. Maybe they got some cool new powers, new abilities, talents, dispositions. The relationships between the characters change as they grow up. Like, it could be either romantically leaning or it could be antagonistically leaning. Like,
yeah, sure.
They've had a disagreement somewhere in the middle and they've split up.
Yeah, and that's the question, right? Like, why do we not follow the characters during this time? Why do you want us to see the difference between, I don't know, 5 years ago and now? And why is that specific long time relevant for the story? I actually had like a high school reunion lately, and this was exactly what happened.
Right.
I think it was 5 years ago that we graduated from high school, and then it was 5 years later, and that's basically like 2 weeks ago where we had this reunion. Like beforehand, before I went there, I was like, what if some people are like literally the same and other people are so different that they're almost unrecognizable, right?
It happens.
People follow different timelines, which is interesting and of course totally fine, but you can really see that in a long-term, well, time skip, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
The reunion was kind of boring in the regard that everyone was kind of interestingly changed. So, I mean, good for them. But, you know, there wasn't like very dramatic differences in lives, right? But imagine if it would, like if one person would have gone down the drain, or would we like super, I don't know, maybe afterwards they had like a mental issue or whatever or anything and they didn't really grow, or they did a lot of different stuff and now are back to where they started.
Yeah.
And another person, person B, might have gone like above and beyond, have like
might have flourished.
Yeah, have flourished, have blossomed. And both of those are fine. But in a time skip like that, you can really almost like aggressively see that difference instantly. And that's, I think, the power of a time skip. So if you want that change to be visible without the characters being shocked by it, then I think you need a time skip.
But one of the most fun things about a time skip is seeing all those changes all at once. You know, you get the look, you get you get the demeanor, you get all the new things that changed about them. Like, I remember, like, growing up, there was a kid that I would see almost weekly. And then, so I would, like, meet with him and hang out with him. And then I kind of broke ties. And then 5 years later, I see him again. And all the changes hit immediately, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you see everything that's changed about them all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you grow up with, like, siblings, and you don't really see how much they've changed. And it, like with a snap, like it's kind of a gradual thing.
The standard thing that your aunts say, like, oh, you've gotten so big. And then you're like, yeah, I don't see it. I don't, this is annoying. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So seeing it all at once is so jarring and almost, and in storytelling, almost entertaining, because you get to slowly learn the context, what happened, what changed about them, which leads into the next point. The big change in time skips is the setting. The setting can change drastically. Usually in fantasy novels, what happens during the time skip is the boring stuff. You know, all the exciting parts we read about and we witnessed chapter to chapter.
Exactly.
But during the period of peace, things have developed, things have changed, the world has become more advanced or grown in a period without war, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We saw in Korra that the advancement of technology was a huge thing in a world that was primarily led by benders, you know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, watching all that play out.
I'm also immediately thinking of, because you're saying like all the boring things happen out inside the time skip a lot of the times, which is very true. But I feel like sometimes it's also interesting to let all the interesting stuff happen in the time skip and then sort of refigure out during your actual story what happened.
Right.
I'm kind of thinking about the 100-year war thing in Avatar. It's not exactly the same thing, but I remember the Zuko episode or another one? I'm not sure. But at some point, Zuko is alone and he's at like having dinner at a family that invited him or something. And then this girl says, yeah, I've been harmed by the Fire Nation too. And then she shows her scars on her leg. And then you're like, oh shit, I keep forgetting that something very big has happened and people have been harmed by this. And that element or that kind of storytelling device is also very wonderful. This is the thing that happens with like amnesia characters. They have a time skip or they missed a month in their memory and they're trying to figure out what it is. Even though it's not a literal time skip, perhaps we see the month happening But if we miss out on time, either through the character or just literally that the story does a time skip, you know, that the next chapter is like 3 years later, we have to figure out what happened in those 3 years. And either that is something that doesn't line up with what we expected, which is, you know, shocking or interesting, or mysterious and confusing, which is like, why does the world look this way now, even though it's been so different 5 years ago, and we don't see the arc, we don't understand how it happened this way, which is an interesting story plot in itself, like sort of figuring out what the hell happened to this place or to this character.
Yeah, it's a little bit of mystery.
Right? You know? Yeah, that's also interesting. And a very, I guess, maybe more purposeful use of the time skip. And the other thing is exactly what you were describing, like it's instantly clear what happened, the technological revolution, or, you know, people have gained power or are in important positions or have traveled and are more wise now or have gone down the drain and are, you know, more angry now. And that, and it's immediately visible and understandable what happened in the time skip. And then you have to think, why do I need this time skip? And why wasn't I there during that decline or during that change of character or situation? Right. And if you have a good reason for it, then by all means, fucking go for it, because it's a very nice way of sort of skipping through time and allowing characters to grow without us being there all the time. Or, you know, if it's a grown thing over years, you know, you can't describe everything that ever happens in your story. Like, you have to prioritize at some point. So if there's 3 years where it's not really specific things that you need to address, but you still want those 3 years to have happened, then yeah, time skip is your way to go, I guess.
By nature, time skips are a little risky from authors, right? Like if you time skip and suddenly this new setting with all these new changed characters isn't what they were reading for in the first place, you might lose a couple people from your audience. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a risk to time skip because it changes what the people are reading for. You know, if the readers are not invested in this new change or these new characters or anything like that, then they won't stick around. But if you pull it off, the fantastic benefits to a time skip is getting to explore that interim. You know, in bits and pieces, maybe not obtusely, maybe not like overtly, you get that narration, like, this is what happened in the last 75 years, you know?
Yeah.
So, but like discovering it along the way, it's please like, oh yeah, my dad was tied up in the war of 45. And we're like, wait, what's the war of 45? You know, start questioning it. And they bits and pieces that put yourself together. Part of the fun is solving that puzzle of what's happened.
Yeah, for sure. And it also ages your setting, right? In a very good, interesting way.
Right. And like matures.
If nothing has ever happened and we've been with everything that ever happened, there's no history to the place or to the people that we are with in the story.
Right.
And that's, I mean, honestly, that's like the main thing of world building, that something happened and this world has been shaped by some way or people or, you know, society or whatever. We probably haven't been there all the time. Like, we've not seen the world be created because our characters literally weren't there. Because they weren't created yet, you know? Or, I don't know, people have died in this war and we don't know about it. Or we only hear old people in the setting talk about it. Like the Breath of the Wild game, where you have like a sort of exposition of before all of this had happened and before Calamity Ganon turned evil, which is kind of the big bad of the game. This was how it actually played out. And then you feel the sort of history seeping through, right? And that's, in a way, any kind of history to a place is a time skip, because we're not literally being there in every historic event that happened, right? So, and if you put that in the middle of your story, then it's a specific, it's a specific afterwards, I guess you could call it, historic event that we haven't been there for, and that needs to feel logical. And if it does, then it's pretty cool.
It's an opportunity to just world build, but later, you know?
exactly.
Like, they explain your world building later. Exactly. Like, one of my favorite things to do is drop something into a scene or a setting. Like, hey, look, it's a giant gear in the ground. Always been here. Always was.
Yeah, that's cool.
Just anyway, the villagers, you know?
Moving on.
and then explaining the context of this weird thing later. Like, way later.
Yeah. That's fun.
The payoff is really fun.
That's so satisfying, honestly, if it takes a shit ton of time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's basically all I wanted to say.
Yeah, very nice. I like it.
If you don't ever want a time skip, you can look towards Pokemon and keep your character 10 years old forever. You'll never lose your audience, but boy, your character will not develop the way you want it to.
You're not wrong. Both of those things are true.
And last note, just as a recommendation, if anybody's out there taking recommendations from this podcast, I'm a real big fan of Vinland Saga. Vinland Saga is an anime that takes place in like a Norse sort of setting.
It sounds Norse, yes.
it follows a young kid during a great exploration era who is very drastically changed halfway through because of things that happened. And the time skip kind of places him as an entirely new character. And you kind of got to fill in the blanks towards what happened in that little interim where bad things happen. Anyway, it's one of those bad time skips where skip was not done because of peace, you know? Mm. Anyway.
Yeah, I like that. Sounds fascinating.
With that, we're nearing I think we've passed the hour mark on this podcast.
Yeah, it's fine.
I believe there's still a prompt that we must go through. Limited to a limited amount of time, but I'm sure we'll get through it.
We'll do
fine.
Like a tiny, tiny, quick back and forth.
Sure. Round. Yeah. Blitz round, blitz prompt.
Exactly. Okay. It's a very literal prompt. We talked about religion. I want us to build a god. Can be any god, can be any religion, can be nice, can be awful, can be childish, can be ye good old wise monk.
Your prompt is build a god, period.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the end of it.
Sure. Yeah. Let's actually build on what we were talking about before with the fungi thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Let's talk about a god that is young and impressionable. How about that? They've gained a lot of power in a very short amount of time. And they're not necessarily I don't want to place them at 18, 20 years old, like a proper, technically adult.
That feels too old still. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to place them at 8 to 10 years old.
Yeah.
They should be very young, very naive.
Yeah.
Suddenly has a lot of power. Maybe, you know what happened? The previous god has died, disappeared in a flurry of ash and light, and has chosen the successor to be this 8 to 10 year old kid with the power of God suddenly thrust in his hands.
Yeah.
What does he do?
What
are his problems?
I feel like this was kind of the I woke up and suddenly I could do anything I wanted kind of style.
Yeah.
Which is maybe the sort of Groundhog Day kind of depression that they first are like, wait, I can do anything. Oh my goodness. And then at first wrecking the world just because. And then they're like, wait, I'm bored now. And then they need to figure out what else.
Right. So I'm thinking the first moment is obviously a lot of candy springs up.
Yeah.
It's grows on trees.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. And after they get done with making slides everywhere in big ball pits.
Yeah.
they fill the ocean with ball pits, of course.
Yeah. Oh, this is great.
Yeah. And the clouds you can pull from the sky, they're cotton candy, things like that.
And then
the world's
what the hell? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The world is suddenly ship traffic has increased 700% due to ball pits in the oceans.
Due to ball pits, yeah.
Giant plastic balls blocking our vessels.
Mm-hmm. And then they're at some point, oh, wait, we don't have any fish coming in. Oh, there's all this streams of income and food draining up because I fucked over the world. This is so annoying. Now I need to fix all this. And then it becomes a hassle.
Breaking news. All my rivers are wrong.
Yeah, exactly. How annoying would that be?
Oh, they have a coloring book and as they draw things, the world changes.
That's cool. I love that.
Like a picture book of the world geography.
Sure.
And they color in land and it turns orange, things like that.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Isn't there a series about this? Chalk Zone? Wasn't that an animation?
Zone. Wow.
That was so fun. Yeah. That was literally this. You draw something and in the other chalk world, I think, it becomes a real thing.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Fucking wild.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's definitely what they have. Yeah, for sure. Best mechanic.
This god definitely has to go through the not very fun arc, and I'm very looking forward to it being done arc, of an adult trying to manipulate what they want to do and being like, hey, you should do this. Oh, your mom would really love it if you increase the economy of this random country in the east by sevenfold.
I mean, this is how they get devout followers, right? People understand now that this wacky little kid has all the power to make ball pits out of oceans. And they're like, well, if you can make a ball pit out of an ocean, can't you do this one thing for me, which is either kill a guy or give me money or I guess fix the ball pit because I'm a fisherman and now my work is literally not existing.
This could be one of those dystopian settings where the godchild is very easily manipulated and, change the world for the worse in favor of a specific country or faction. I would much prefer if this godchild was naive in a pure way, where they weren't so easily influenced and they always find alternative ways to please everybody. And
it's quite nice.
One of the people trying to influence him would be like, oh, it'd be really great if my country had a lot of firepower to match the greater nations of the world. Mm-hmm. And the kid is like, oh, you want a fair fight? Okay. Turns all the guns into plastic, you know, just this sure. kind of,
yeah,
like a playful, a playful yeah. naivety. Yeah.
That's quite nice. Yeah. I can also see this maybe before even the playfulness that happens, maybe like right after people start asking for things or they start to gain a following that they don't really want or, you know, get better from mm-hmm. because they just right. need to grant wishes, basically. I can imagine that one person just, I don't know, accidentally stumbles upon them or is like, hey, what are you doing here? And they're just chilling and they don't want anything from them. And it's their first right. friend. And it's like, oh, I actually like that you literally don't ask anything of me. Because it's so annoying that literally everyone else I meet wants something from me.
Yeah. Like they're like a jaded god, you know, like the makings of one.
I guess so. Yeah.
But yeah, like just gods want to be happy too, you know?
Yeah. Moral of the story.
Yeah. The world's first cleric is that one person who was just a friend to.
I mean, yeah. Isn't that the coolest? Yeah. Because they actually believe in them and not in their powers.
Oh, that would be a fun premise where yeah. the main character
just is the friend.
Is the friend, and they just kind of have to steer this god towards the path of good and righteousness.
Yeah, they're just figuring out what it is to either make people happy and not like gain their aggression because they don't do it yeah. the way they do it. Yeah.
And it's just like the mildly inconvenienced and stressed like store clerk at the local shop who like has to take on this grand responsibility of yeah. like training the next god.
For sure, yeah. I guess like maybe also in a sort of Lion King Zazu kind of style, all the countries yes. send like teachers or something or like counselors or people that want to guide them in the right path and want to educate mm-hmm. them on what's good and moral and ethic. But it's just basically Zazu that's like constantly behind the two friends that are just chilling. And Zazu right, is right. like all the time wrong about what actually had to happen. Yeah. In the way of like, if somebody asks like, hey, can you give us the most firepower ever? And then they just, Zazu is like, well, that's super dangerous. Maybe you should not do it and walk away from it. And they're just like, haha, your guns are plastic. And then that also works. Right? So
my
Zazu is constantly
conflict
wrong.
In the bloodlands.
Exactly.
Reaching yeah. an all-time high. It's like, but it's nap time.
Yeah.
On asleep.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, love exactly. that. Perfect.
Yeah. And I want to believe that like he had the godchild had a plethora of choices to choose as their advisor, and they choose the guy who runs the candy store. Like, oh, he's always been nice to me.
That's how it worked. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And then this guy's like, wait, what am I doing? What are you paying me for? Okay, I guess. Like, do I just walk with you? Sure. And that's like the third companion. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is great.
Do you have like life insurance and like health benefits?
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be really fun.
Amazing.
So slice of life raising a god.
It's like slice of life godchild meets friend who just happens upon them meets candy store councilman.
Amazing.
Yeah. Beautiful. I could see this
cool.
happening.
All right.
Wonderful.
Thanks everyone for tuning in. Gosh, this was an episode. Next week, look forward to updates on my wallet and Merle's plant.
Yeah.
Exciting new thrilling
content
elements in our life. Content. That's
yes.
what it is. Content. Uh-huh. As always, we hope you listen to this podcast and are inspired to build and create worlds of your own, whether they have gods or time skips or anything in between. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Always remember, above all, your rivers are wrong.
Yep. They're pretty wrong. Still wrong.
Have a good one.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes that you'd like to hear us cover, feel free to contact us at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. Our intro and outro music is written by Maarten Schellekens. Thanks for that. And again, thank you so much for listening. We hope to see you at the next one.